Hey guys, welcome back to my channel for another episode of Porn Star Confessions. Today I'm super excited. I've got just porn legend, the one, the only, Steve Cruz.
Well, thank you. I don't know if I'm a legend, but I'm still here, if that means anything.
I think that's one of the qualifiers for being legendary status.
Well, you hear that word kicked around so much nowadays, you know, legend, but I'm humbled by that, so thank you. It means I must have worked hard to get somewhere while I was here.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, and you've worked hard on both sides of the camera.
Yeah, I mean, I had a shorter career as a model only because I started late. And also, I don't know, once I got into the directing and on the other side of the lens, I kind of preferred that. And it's, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, flipping back and forth was kind of difficult. So, because I use a different part of my brain for the performing, I feel like, than I did for the directing. So, like when I would film myself, I would have a hard time, like, this is too much. So I decided I'd pick a side. I stuck with directing.
Okay. Do you feel like directing is less taxing, whether it's emotionally, physically?
I think it's more taxing. I think directing is more complicated. It's a more difficult job. Not physically, but just all the things you have to juggle. Because for me, directing isn't just directing. It's producing and directing, and then I run camera, and then I edit. So there's so many facets to that we could get into. But performing was just getting your dick hard and fucking hot guys and coming, and that was really, really easy for me. You know? It's physically taxing. You know, preparing for a scene, especially for studios, I would say, and especially back in the day when I was a performer, it was very physically taxing. I still think it's physically taxing, but I didn't intend on a career in porn. I sort of fell into it and then was completely surprised that anybody was even interested, to be quite honest. And then it just, I was like, well, you know, it's in my personality. It's like, once I do something, I commit to it. And I do it fully. So I just said, okay, you know what? I'm going to get on the surfboard. I'm going to catch a wave. And when it's over, it's over. And it's still going. So, you know, I'm very lucky.
No, I think there's a lot of talent there too.
Well, thanks.
What's that famous quote? There's a quote where luck is when preparation meets something else. You know what I'm talking about?
Preparation meets H. No, not that. Okay, sorry. Just taking
no, the dirty. Preparation meets hard work or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do not shy from hard work. I take it serious. Even porn, you know, I say even porn. Porn's challenging. But, you know, I didn't just show up and expect things to just happen for me. Like, you know, I turned it out and I commit. So, you know, and I love this job, you know, if for something that was supposed to be a gay midlife crisis, like, you know, fuck some hot guys and, you know, get over a bad relationship. That's basically why I got into porn. And then I loved the creative aspect of it so much that I just jumped into all those aspects and I met the right people. And I don't know, it just, and here we are.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start at the very, very beginning.
The very, very beginning. Okay.
Your life like growing up.
First shoot beginning. Like, you know, how it all came about.
Growing up.
Oh, shit. Okay. You want to talk about growing up. So this is psychological. Well, good, because I have therapy tomorrow. So if I talk with you about it now, maybe I can get a discount. Right?
Of course.
I need a voucher to turn into my therapist tomorrow. So what do you want to know?
Oh, like what did you Like, did you have a good childhood? Do you go to college? You know, earlier
Okay.
jobs, all that kind of thing.
So I had a weird childhood. I was my parents divorced when I was like really young. So I don't really even remember them together. I like have a few like snapshots, like pictures in my brain of like what the bedroom looked like in that house. And I remember like just a few memories, but most of my childhood, my parents were separated, and my grandparents, actually my great grandparents, raised me. And they were religious. They were Mormons. So it was an interesting childhood, but it was good in that my grandparents taught me some things and gave me a kind of life that, parents didn't parent that way in the 70s when I was growing up. So, as religious as they weren't strict with me, and they encouraged all my creative endeavors. And I was as busy as I am now as an adult. I was that busy as a kid, drawing on walls and doing all this crazy shit and playing instruments. And so my grandmother just kind of gave me the space and the attention to explore my creativity at a young age. And so I feel very fortunate to be raised by my grandparents in a different generation with a different perspective. Like, how trendy it is, like in the last 10 years, to grow your own food and go farm to table and all this stuff. And in the 70s, like, we lived in the suburbs of San Francisco, so we kind of lived in the city, and it was weird that we had corn stalks in our backyard. You know what I mean? Like, in suburbia, we were like raising our own vegetables and eating them. Weird shit like that. That today, she taught me how to cook and all that stuff. Like, now I'm a gardener. Now I do these things that in my spare time that maybe not everybody gets to do. It has a different perspective. I was very fortunate.
So, would you say that you're pretty much going from the moment you wake up in the morning, you roll out of bed and
I'm a
hit
busy
the day?
person. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true about me. And if I didn't have this job, I'd be doing it with something else. And when I did another job before this job, I was that way too. I just kind of get up and I get really busy. And then in my spare time, I want to get away from work so I can go over here and paint or DJ or do some or play my guitar or do some other shit. I just, yeah. I don't know, like, I must have had a really short life in a past lifetime where I feel like I gotta fit it all in right now. Because it doesn't ever seem to be enough time. I always want to do more.
Yeah, no, I mean, at least for me personally, as soon as I hit 40, that's when I became a lot more aware of my mortality and just like, oh shit, there's only so much time left. But it sounds like you almost always had that mindset.
I mean, we could really jump into that, and it would get kind of weird. And as I've seen different therapists, and then I've seen different psychics, and I don't know if your viewers even get into all that stuff, but I've had people tell me weird shit about that. But yeah, I think I've just pretty much been operating like maximize your time. I think a lady came up to me at like Folsom Street Fair, like when I was 19, and said to me, she was like a fortune teller, and if I bought her a beer, she would tell me a fortune. And she says, "You never settle down. There's not enough hours in the day for you, and you're just never going to be satisfied with that. You just keep going, going, going." And I'm like, God, that's really accurate, and it's still been accurate. So,
Jesus.
strange. Fun stuff. Like I said, I grew up in the Bay Area of San Francisco, so I came out of the closet when I was 14. I knew I was queer when I was like 12, and probably younger than that, but like one sex. Like, I've never had sex with a female. I'm full on Kinsey six, so I think I always knew I liked boys. I was screwing around with boys when I was like 10. Like, the neighbor across the street, he was my best friend, and I were like screwing around in the bushes, and it just all seemed very like it's what I always wanted to do, suck some dicks, and I was pretty cool with all of it, But everyone else around me wasn't as cool with it, but I didn't really give a shit. And I came out of the closet in high school. I basically everybody knew, like around 14. I had a gay uncle, so he lived in San Francisco, so I would take the subway, which is BART, out to San Francisco and spend weekends out there and kind of be a child, but a teenager, but part of the gay community, which is kind of weird but kind of nice in the 80s when it was super scary. I went to Gay Pride in 87. I went to my first Folsom Street Fair when I was 14 in 1987. So it, in a way, it's
Jesus.
like, yeah, it's an
Was it
interesting life.
the same way back then as it is now?
Well, what do you mean? In what way?
Like,
I mean, way different,
as.
I would say. Being queer in high school was tough. And I'm a shorter stature guy, not really that strong. So, I had to kind of fend for myself in ways that were non-physically violent, more psychological. But no one ever really fucked with me. They wanted to, but no one ever actually, kicked my ass or, I could have been a lot worse. And then I had people telling me in high school that they were kind of afraid to fuck with me because I look like I might do something like insane to them. That's kind of goth and kind of like, like I didn't want to fuck with you because maybe you might like fight back in a really weird way or something. I'm like, yeah, I probably might have. I don't know. But
Wow.
I guess I just didn't
Okay.
seem very afraid of, toxic masculinity back then. I was, but I just didn't act like it. So,
Yeah.
I know it wasn't easy to come out of the closet. It was very difficult. I felt like I was the only one for a really long time. And I hear all these really awesome sex stories of like guys who flew under the radar, were on sports teams, and jerked off with their best friends and had all these like hot encounters and then didn't come out and even realize they were queer until they were like well into their 20s or college. And I didn't get to have any of those sexual experiences because I was identifiably queer at 14. So anybody that was having homoerotic, like, the things that happen when teenagers want to, well, they weren't going to do that with me because I was defined. And if you fuck around with me, then you're a fag. So I missed out on all the great sex when it was safe when I was a teenager. And then when I became kind of age, I started fucking around with guys like real sex when I was like late 16, 17 years old. And by then I was like graduating. And those guys were kind of I don't know. I did it because I wanted to get laid, but I really wasn't into any of those guys because they weren't the kind of guy that I liked. I liked more the guys that weren't like me, but were really big and masculine. I hate throwing that word around because toxic mass for mass. But that's what I liked back then. Yeah, so but back then we had HIV, AIDS, and people were dying in San Francisco and you could see it everywhere. And so I never got fucked for a really long time. I wouldn't participate in any of that because I just, it could be a death sentence. So, I just kind of blew guys and spit it out. And so I really feel like I didn't really get into my sexual self like until maybe the 2000s, I would say. So I started attracting guys. Like I was 27, 28, and I started attracting guys that I liked, and they liked me back. And we started having butt sex. You know what I mean? So it's weird because for coming out so young and coming out in those times, there was this whole kind of stunted period where I was kind of not fully engaging and then kind of rediscovering those things like later. It's a funny timeline.
No, I mean, okay, I get why when you're talking about high school, why someone wouldn't want to do something with you because you were kind of like labeled. But I would think someone would have approached you like on the down low to, do something behind closed doors. No?
No, I can my first sexual experiences with guys in high school was like without guys that I would meet in dance clubs. And, I was 16, he was 19, kind of a thing. Yeah. Which, that's bad. So most of my sex life, believe it or not, was porn. Like Men Magazine and Falcon Videos and Cult. I was huge, huge, huge into Cult and also Christian Bjorn. I loved all the Christian Bjorn guys because I like uncut guys like the most. And I think I was just like I could not get enough of those international those guys that were natural in that way. So yeah. Maybe that's
So,
ultimately why I landed here in this seat because I had such a relationship with porn.
what were you doing for work like early 20s?
Well, I had a okay, so I'm growing up in the Bay Area. I'm living in San Francisco by the time I'm 17. I have my own apartment, and then I become a raver. Because that's kind of, well, they were underground parties, and then I was following DJs around, and then all of a sudden the Brits showed up in San Francisco, and now it's called raving. And so I ran around and partied a lot. And by the time I was 22, I was in rehab. So I would, yeah, like by the time I got to be about 21, 22, meth got really big in San Francisco, and I kind of fell into it. So like yeah, I had to kind of clean myself up. Once I got through all that, I feel like I really started to hit who I really am today, maybe by 26, 27 after I got cleaned up. And then I was a graphic artist. I didn't go to college. I mean, I went to college, but I didn't complete college. I was poor and I didn't really pay attention to my grades in high school. So I couldn't get scholar I didn't I wouldn't qualify for scholarships on talent where you'd need other grades. So I ended up just really thriving when the tech boom happened. I would say like at the end of the 90s, the beginning of the 2000s, San Francisco had a huge tech boom, and I met the right people, and they taught me how to do front end web design, and I had a artistic talent. So I would basically help small business owners brand themselves and get a web presence up. Nowadays, you just go to a WordPress or there's a million, Squarespace, there's a million ready-made templates, and I wouldn't have a job today. But back then it was good. And I thrived, and I worked for companies like Crystal Geyser Water and Hasbro, and then a small companies and nonprofit organizations. In San Francisco, I worked for the AIDS Foundation and others. We did a lot of outreach in the community in San Francisco, getting people off of meth and safe sex, which in the 2000s was a big deal, and helping people, not catch HIV. That was what we were getting paid to do. So that's what I was doing right before I got into porn.
Gotcha. And going back to what you're saying about like HIV and all that, what made you transition from no butt sex to okay, now I'm ready to have butt sex?
I don't know. I mean, times were changing, and I got really into feeling free because I had a partner at the time. And for the first year, anyway, we were monogamous. It's the only time I was ever successful with monogamy was for that brief year and a half when I was in love. And then the two of us, he was about 12 or 13 years older than me. He was a daddy, and I was like 28. So we decided to open up our relationship and bring in guest stars to the party. And so we'd have friends with benefits, and it just kind of seemed a little safer, even though it wasn't necessarily safe to bear back at that point. And then, and then I got into porn after that. I don't know. I mean, we were using condoms too, but I don't know. Nobody wanted to use condoms, let's be honest.
Yeah, no, they're not fun at all. And like, it's as far as you going to rehab and getting sober and all that, was there a straw that broke the camel's back with that?
Yeah, it's a sad story. I went to Steamworks in Berkeley, and my friend always invited me. We get high, we go out, and then we go to Steamworks. And I never had a problem with erections. I still don't have a problem with erections. But this particular evening, we're setting up camp, and I did my laps, and I see the guy that I want, to fuck, and he wants to fuck me, and he follows me in my room, and it wouldn't work for the first time in my life. And I'm standing there like mortified, like and embarrassed. And I mean, there's other things too that are bad, like my life's falling apart and I'm losing jobs and all these other things. But the day that I finally decided, okay, stop fucking around, was the day that some guy called me Crystal Dick to my face. And slammed the door to the bathhouse. So I was like, okay. you've already been to rehab. This is a relapse. Like you know what you need to do, and you're not even enjoying yourself anymore. Like you can't even, like now you're at the point where your dick's not even working, and pretty soon you're gonna lose your job again. And so why don't you just get yourself back in the program? And I did. And that was my clean date. Like February 28th, 1999 is my
Wow.
last day that I used meth. So I want to reach out and thank that guy for calling me a crystal dick to my face. Because honestly, I mean, it's the silliest things, and it now seems so vapid and superficial, because there could be far, far worse bottoms. Well, I was homeless on my on the time before when I got, that the first time I got into rehab was a lot worse. And I'm not afraid of talking about it, but just a big fucking downer, basically. But couch surfing and losing jobs and just no self-respect and all that stuff. But the thing that really got me to grow up was that day at Steamworks.
Wow. That's no, I actually really like that because there are, I don't know, it's interesting how, you can be told a piece of advice or someone can say something to you a thousand times. So then there's that one time that it just clicks for whatever reason. And
I don't know, it just had never happened to me before, I think was the issue. I was just always so horny and always so hard, and then this thing happened, and it's like, I don't know, it shame I felt shamed, ashamed, and I kind of spent the rest of the entire time at the bathhouse while my friends getting laid, running around, like hiding in my room. And then I was like, okay, that's the part of meth where you're like, you're afraid to interact with people, and I didn't want to do that.
yeah.
The social anxiety part of it and the shame part of it. So, yeah, I
Nice.
got into a
No, I
meeting.
mean, that's awesome that you got off of it because
Yeah,
that.
I mean it is, because I see time and time again, it keeps coming up, and I'm always so surprised that as a community we're still here with it. But
Yeah.
it does affect our community, and it hasn't changed. And it breaks my heart every time. So
Yeah.
I'm lucky.
Yeah.
I'm lucky.
No, it's it. I'm in. I feel the exact same way you do. Like, it just breaks my heart, especially when you see performers who seem to have everything going on the right path, and then they try it one time and
Yeah. Well, I mean,
throw it all
I
away.
think it's fair for me to say that I'm not even the same person. Like, if you told me that there was a part of my spirit that died in order to get rid of my addiction, I would believe you. Or if you said to me, like, we're getting Halloween season, let's talk about possession. Like, say you had this thing, this energy that was just following you around and making you be attracted to things, and then it went away. Like, I really feel like I'm a completely different person than the person that got addicted to drugs. I feel like I've had a total shedding of that. But I also feel like maybe I did work in therapy, because for me, doing drugs at all, any kind of drug, was changing the way I felt. I wanted to change my feelings, and I didn't want to be this person. I needed to mask it with this thing. So I feel like It's not as like one person can get introduced to a drug or an experience. They'll do it once or twice, have the experience, and then they'll lay it back down and go back to their lives. Another person will walk into the room, they'll pick up the experience, and they'll have a good time, a bad time, whatever, but they're just obsessed with this and they just can't put it down. I was that person for a while, and I think it was because I really needed to change my feelings about something. Until I realized, you got to do the work. You've got to do the work on yourself to change this, and then your life will change. And I did. And that's what worked for me, is saying, you know what? I'm not comfortable altering my feelings. So, like, I can't, do edibles. I can't, smoke pot, which really sucks because I really need to relax. You know what I mean? I can't do things that other people can do to kind of take the edge off, because I'm not comfortable changing my feelings in that way artificially. I'm not, I'm, it's, I can never just relax. So
No, I
anyway,
get it.
yeah.
No,
So
and
that's
I mean, that's all rooted in personal responsibility, though, too, which is a good thing.
some of it. Yeah, I would say taking responsibility for your own actions, how you behave, how you affect other people, but that's so multi-layered. Just getting off of drugs is like one thing. And then the rest, it's all of that's just there. Like who you are when you're that person is just waiting for you. And then you work the steps or you don't, I don't know. It's just a
Yeah, but
long one.
no, like personal responsibility is what kept you off of it. Okay, I don't like the way I'm feeling. Instead of let's go use this drug, it's something's fucked.
Well, I
How are
want to
we
have a
gonna
life.
fix it?
I want to have a real life. I wanted to have, I just got to the point where it's like, okay, I'm done being a victim. I'm done, like, this didn't happen for me. This didn't happen for me. I'm done blaming my past. I'm done blaming this. And I'm going to take responsibility and say that if I want the life that I want to lead, that I'm going to have to get out there and be courageous. I'm going to have to do it. And so, I did. I said, I'm going to be an artist. I want to make an impact in the world. I want to be an artist. I want to be a graphic artist, and so what if I don't have a full degree in that? I can still do this. And then you just kind of, get up and work hard every day. And I'm a version of what I wanted to be when I was a kid. I mean, I'll admit, I always wonder, oh, if I would have had the money, or if I would have done things differently, where I might have worked at this age. And like, but I have a good life. I feel very, very privileged in this industry and how I've been received in this industry, and I feel like I do good work in the industry, and I'm doing all a lot of the things that I wanted to do, like motion graphics. I for some reason really get off on doing all my own motion graphics in my trailers and pushing
What
myself every
is
time.
that?
So like if you look at okay, so like the Overdrive, the movie that we're releasing on the 29th of this month for Halloween. It's called Overdrive, and it's sort of like a hybrid horror movie, thriller, porn movie. And there's some amazing performances in it. We can talk about that later. But all the motion graphics that make it horror genre, the titles animating and the sounds and the
Oh,
music
okay.
and all that stuff. I do all that for all of my movies. I do that myself. And I feel like it makes it my vision to be able to do that for myself, not having to turn that over to someone else. And then, can you make it like this? And then they don't quite get it right because they're not you. Only you can really make it right for you. So, and every movie I push myself a little bit harder, or the camera work that I do, push myself a little bit harder to make it more my vision and make it more upscale and make it more like a real movie, I try. I never get tired of that. So, anyway.
No, I think that's amazing that you're constantly improving and growing and expanding your repertoire. And I completely get what you mean because I've had higher graphic designers before, and I'm just like, no, like more
Let's
this.
talk.
And
Let's talk after this.
so, how did you? All right, so you're doing graphic design, you're building websites for all these different companies. How did that turn into porn?
Well, I mean, it didn't turn into porn. It was like I was doing all of this for a living, and then I had a really bad breakup, and it was like the most. It's funny to me now when I look at it. Oh, that was the worst thing that ever happened to you. I mean, you nearly killed yourself on drugs, and you've been to rehab how many times, and you couldn't get your fucking shit together, and you're homeless. But that heartbreak from that one person that you thought you were in love with, which today I look at it and I think it's so silly, but that's the thing that made me go, God, I just don't want to be sad anymore. Like, I'm at the prime of my life. I'm at the peak of my physical shape. I've never had hotter guys in my life chasing me around San Francisco, but I'm brokenhearted about this. So I'm gonna change how I feel about this by accepting some of these offers at these porn companies. And when you live in a town like San Francisco in the mid-2000s, all the studios were there for the most part. I mean, some in LA. And then, of course, Lucas was in New York, but like, a lot of studios, which are now all one studio that I work for. Hot House was a different studio from Raging, Falcon was a different studio from Titan, and Colt was there. So, and then others, Treasure Island was there. And so, if you look reasonably attractive, they need to cast. And so I had a few offers to do movies from a young age. I didn't, luckily, I did not say yes when I was using. I feel like I'd be dead if I did. I was smart enough to say, no, I can't do that. But I came back when, later, after like I'd say 5 or 6 years of sobriety and a broken heart, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna say yes to some of these offers because I'm not gonna sit around here and be sad about this breakup. I'm gonna fuck some hot guys. You know what? I'm gonna finally do it. So I walked into Raging Stallion, who made me the offer first at that time. And I said, okay, if I do this, who are you gonna put me with? And what are we gonna do? What is it gonna be like? Because I don't know. So they invited me to watch Dean Monroe, bottom. I don't remember who the top was, but Dean Monroe was the bottom, big porn star at the time. And he's like, he was so kind to let me come and sit there and watch the scene quietly with the director by my side, from beginning to end, so I can see how it was done. I feel like it's really fortunate because I wouldn't do it unless I could see how it was done. I wanted to make sure I was in a safe space, and they did that for me. And Dean was really kind, and I saw how cum shots were done, and all the lighting and the stopping, and that. So that was really helpful because it's not like real. It's not a collab. Studio work is not a collab. It is hard. It is stop and start and relight and. Hard-ons on command, and it was not easy. So I got to see all that, so it was easier for me when it was my turn. And yeah, I mean, I went with them first, and then I had friends at Titan, so they were mad because I went to Raging. And but they got over it, and the director there got over it, and he's like, okay, and he put me with Francois Sagat, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, if I had a bucket list. You just fucking knocked the top of my bucket list off for my second scene. Like I could just stop right now after this fucking scene with Francois and say, I've had it all. I felt so lucky to have a scene. He's such a good guy. We're still friends today, and that was such a fun time. But you just it was just opposite my day job. It was just a thing that I was doing to it's kind of funny. I talk about changing feelings, but here I did it again with porn, so it's kind of funny. Like I had to give myself a new name and a new identity to not be that sad boy that was dumped by that, by that daddy. So in a weird way, it's like, okay, I did have another life. I did kind of regenerate and reinvent myself to become this other thing. So I became Steve Cruz instead of, Steve Duarte.
Oh, shit.
So that was
Okay.
fun. It was a wild ride because, we had magazines back then. So I got a magazine cover and then I built my own website. And it was like within 3 months of doing porn, I had fans. That was weird to me. I had blog interactions with them, I had a following. We didn't have social media back then. But that's kind of how it happened. It just kept going and going, and award shows, all that.
So Going backtracking a little bit, what made that heartbreak hit so fucking hard? Like,
Well,
why
I
that one?
mean, in a nutshell, the heartbreak was I was in love with this person and I was committed and I thought that that was going to be the relationship, for me. I could have gone all the way with that one. And we were together for 6 years when he changed his mind, met somebody else, and went a different way. And I was the last person to know. All my friends knew. I didn't know. So it was like, it was twofold because it was like, it was a trust issue for a Scorpio. But then it was also like, wait, y'all knew that he was carrying this on and like, are you're not my friends? So I had not only had divorced my partner and lost that, I decided to divorce my friends too because they weren't friends. So it was kind of a big
Fuck.
deal. But you grow
Yeah.
from it. I mean, now I want to send him a card and I want to say thank you for breaking my heart. And I don't mean that in a revengeful way. I mean it with a full open heart. You don't know what a blessing it was to dump me and have me be wrecked because I had to build myself up again, like I had to after rehab. I had to build myself to be my own daddy. And I did that in that process. I reinvented my identity. I went for, something that I wanted and became internationally known in a field where most people don't do that. Most people don't. Well, now I guess because we have social media, you can do that. But at the time, it was kind of a big deal to me. I
That's
didn't
way
claim
more
to be.
impressive when you did it.
Well, I'm not going to take away from content creators because I have so much deep respect for that. And I think it was a different time. But I was able
Yeah.
to do something only because somebody broke something down and I built it back up again. If he was in my life, I don't think I would have had the courage or even the drive to do this at all. It was almost like it was the catalyst, that moment that you needed to kind of prove something to myself, maybe, that I could walk on my own 2 feet and not be broken by something. And then it turns out it was way more than that. I got to become who I really am, and maybe
Yeah.
he was holding me back because I had a daddy. When you have a daddy, it's like it's all about daddy, which
No,
I'm
I'm
not.
impressed. That's
But
a
I needed to be my
very.
own dad. So yeah, that's the answer in a nutshell.
No, I like that. That's. I mean, number one, that's fucked up because I've.
Oh, it happens. People get dumped all the time. Shit
Yeah.
happens. And they're betrayed and whatever. It's the heart. It's just the way it is.
No, I definitely empathize with you because I've been left for another guy before and I didn't leave the house for an entire year. So I've
Yeah.
been there.
I called it 2000 sucks. It was 2006, and I called it 2000 sucks. Until September of 2006, and then that's when my career started, so.
No, I mean, I think though the way that you look at it and your mindset, as far as, here's a fucked up situation and here's all these amazing things I'm gonna do as a result of it, I think that's phenomenal. I think more
Well,
people need to have that mindset.
I mean, you don't, I didn't just wake up one day and just say, I'm going to do all these things. But I did say, I feel like there's something bigger for me. I feel like I want to try this. I don't want to be set. I knew that I didn't want to be in a relationship. So I was thinking to myself, I'm either going to become a porn star or I'm going to become an escort because I need this huge emotional, I am unavailable to date. I need to do something for a while. And I did. I mean, I think I didn't start dating again until my current marriage. And that started in 2008. So I stayed single for 2 years in that whole period of
Wow.
time. And fucking hot guys all over the world really made it easy. Plus, here's the thing. If I was revengeful, which I'm not, I would say that maybe it was difficult for him to turn around. And every time he turned around, all of our friends are saying, I saw your boyfriend up on the screen at the Eagle. I saw your boyfriend on the cover of this. He's on the box of another. I see him in the Castro. I see him in New York at the sex shop. Yeah, I see your boyfriend. I see your boyfriend. He's got a bunch of followers. Anyway.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. That would, yeah. What,
Concept.
I think Frank Sinatra said that the best revenge is massive success.
But
And
I'm
definitely
glad that I don't
masterpiece
feel
that.
revengeful. I'm glad I don't feel revengeful. I think it's just funny. I joke about it.
Yeah.
Just the way I joke about, like, I got into porn so they have something interesting to play at my funeral. They're just
Oh my
sick. Give me another question. Let's move on from this topic. What else you got?
Okay, so you're shooting all these porns, you're fucking all these hot guys, you're knocking shit off your bucket list, all this stuff. When did it start to transition to the other side of the camera?
All right, so I had this idea. I become an exclusive. I worked the rounds at first because I didn't want to just be an exclusive. I wanted to, I was an, I'm an experiencer, I guess. So I wanted to work for as many studios as I could to see, this is like a fun game now. So I worked for Hot House. I almost worked for Colt, but I signed an exclusive contract when they finally asked me. So I missed that, Christopher Weston, and I'm always bummed about that. Because he had a really good idea for a movie, Fantasy Island remake, and I was gonna be Tattoo, because I was tattooed and really short, which would be so amazing and funny, but I didn't get to do that one. But anyway, I had this idea as an exclusive at Raging that I wanted to make and I wanted to be the star of. So I wrote like my first screenplay, I handed it over to Chris Ward, and we made it. And they heard about that over at Falcon, and they were having issues with the competitive line to Raging Stallion at the time. It's called Mustang. So that director was, the sales were going, So we all went to dinner. I told him all these ideas I had, and then he's like calling me and he's like, okay, I know you're Raging Stallion exclusive, but we're looking for a director and we've got the guy to do the technical, the camera work, but we want your ideas. And do you think you could do it, or would it, be a breach of your contract? I went back to Raging. They were working with Jake Deckard at the time, because he and I were coming up at the same time, but he was working with Chris to become a director, so they didn't have room for me for my ambitions. So Chris said, go ahead, go over to Mustang and why don't you try it? And I did, and my sales were good. Of course, I went over there not with one idea, but I went over there with my idea is a box set. My movie is a three-part movie that you could sell individually, but also stands on their own. It was RGB, red, blue, green for the video. And I was like, the first movie's blue movie. The second movie's red light for hustlers. So we did like a vintage porn movie for the first movie, an homage to that. We did Red Light District for red, and then green, we're gonna do Green Door. And they were like, oh, okay. So I got three jobs out of that, and they're like, you know what? Why don't you stick around? You're doing a good job. And so I got to learn from the technical guy, how to direct, and watching him do camera and learning about lights, and as I'm, piecing all my ideas together every other month while we do these, movies. And then the companies all decided to merge, which was also like right place, right time for me. So while I was over at Falcon, but I was an exclusive performer at Raging, AEBN, which now owns our company, bought Raging Stallion. And then they wanted to buy Falcon. So I was just kind of in the middle of these two companies right before they merged. So I guess I made the cut for directors, because I was already a performer. I had the history with this company. It just seemed to fit. And in that way, I say I feel like it's all luck, with that being at the right place at the right time to have this great opportunity happen. And then you just have to have the energy to meet it with good ideas. But
Jesus.
Raging taught me camera. Like, they didn't teach me camera over at Falcon. The guy didn't want to teach me. So Raging Stallion was like, he put a camera in my hand and he's like, go. He taught me how to edit. And he was just like, I'm going to give you one lesson, two lessons, and then you're on your own. So,
Oh
like,
shit.
I learned so much by making every fucking mistake you could ever make. You have to make that ugly shit that you did look pretty. But it's such a great way to learn because you don't want to be embarrassed. You got to stand up. It's your reputation. And I have everything that I've learned in editing and camera work, I've learned because I didn't, I wanted it to be just a little bit better next
Yeah.
time.
Wow. That,
Yeah.
I mean, you basically jumped in the deep end of the pool then.
Yeah, I did, I guess. Experiencer.
No. So I had no idea that they were all basically one company now.
Well, so AEBN buys Raging, then they buy Naked Sword, then they buy Falcon. I think that's the order that it happened. Naked Sword was just a VOD site at the time, which now my boss, Tim Valenti, who's our executive producer of all the brands, was head of his own company. They weren't making movies until, well, actually, after the merger, they made their first one, which was a movie about San Francisco, and I actually ran camera on the on that first movie. Someone else directed it. So they started becoming producers in, I think, 2010. So they were all
Jesus.
different companies. And then Hot House was run by Stephen Scarborough. And then we ended up buying that company. Well, I say my company bought that last. They bought that, like, I think 2014. And all those lines are still viable. They're still producing with different directors. I
Wow.
focus on Raging Stallion right now. I feel like that's where my heart's at. I did do some Falcon. I recently was moved from Raging in 2020 to Falcon. They asked me to bring my ideas to the Falcon brand. But this year I came back and I said it would be great if I could work on some Ragings again, because I really like the type of guy Raging, like guys like you. Like tattooed, hairy, masculine, beefy, and leather Levi Eagle, scruffy, that kind of vibe. So I'm back on
Gotcha.
the line that I love. So that's really
So
great.
that's where your heart is.
I mean, if I'm making porn, that's I think where my heart is. I can do anything. Like, I would go back and make a Falcon tomorrow if they said you're making a Falcon. Like, I'm a big believer in what's in my chopped basket. Okay. I got a dildo, I got this performer, and I got this iPhone. Okay, we're gonna make an award-winning movie with these three ingredients. You know what I mean? I take it as a
Awesome.
challenge. It's fun. But if you ask me what do I want to make, I like making raging movies for the raging customer. I feel like I was that guy from the very beginning. My fans are there, they followed me, they're loyal. So I want to make movies for them.
There anything you haven't shot yet that you still want to shoot?
But I haven't shot yet. I think I've shot everything. Although I ran drone for the first time on my last movie. Excuse me. I just came home from a shoot on the Carolina coast, and I bought a drone. And so we bought this drone at the company, and nobody fucking uses it because nobody has the license to operate this drone. And it's like, oh, we don't have time to, train ourselves to do this and do that. So I said, I'm gonna buy a drone that's under the weight of having a drone operating license, and I'm just gonna teach myself how to fly the motherfucking drone. And then I'm just gonna, like, I'll buy it with my own money, and then I'll put the footage in my movie. And so that's what I did. So I'm doing things like that, where it's like, okay, I need to stop waiting for this to happen and go out and do it. So it's fun.
What's the
It has me.
most challenging thing you've ever done on set? You're just like, fuck, I don't know if I can make this work. And then you just somehow string a bunch of random things together, like you're saying with the cell phone dildo.
I can't think of anything that was the hardest thing. I will say that every time I go and make a movie, I'm faced with challenges. Like, production is just a really hard job because at a moment's notice, you could lose a location, or at a moment's notice, a model can get sick, or their test isn't clear, or they're in a bad mood that day, and you've got to find a way to keep them feeling sexy, and positive, and still come off like making Falcon level movies, you know, and have it look right. I run the camera and I direct. So that's challenging. So I just think every single time I go back to making a movie, it's as hard as it was on day one, with the exception of I have all these skills now that I built up.
Yeah.
But in my mind, the perfectionist and the person that wants it to be good, and you know, the person with low self-esteem that's just trying to prove themselves, like I go right back to start every single time I make a movie. It doesn't matter how far I've come, or this legend thing that you allege that may not be true, you know, or if I get, you know, I do have my share of a few awards, but that doesn't ever really sink in with me. It's like I always feel like I need to prove to myself I can be better. It can be better. It can be better, you know. So I think every time is hard for me. It really is.
Okay.
Every time I'm like, oh God, how can I make this easier?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that anyone who's successful at anything will always look back and wonder, was I really doing enough or did I give 100%? And I think that's probably one of the things that makes you amazing at what you do.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I think I would be better if I could relax and let things flow into success. Because you always read that about things like, you know, you don't want to be a perfectionist. You want to like open up to the universe and allow. And every time I do that, like I'll have a production, everything will go wrong. Like when I was in Spain. Okay, here's a good example. I was shooting last year in Spain during European Grabbies, and my star got sick. So the screenplay that was written for this had to be changed every single day. And we had to switch it up from boyfriends touring, you know, and going on vacation together to two best friends. So every day I had to figure out how either I was going to get this page rewritten or how I was going to have to reshoot it myself every day and rebuild this movie from scratch. But at the end of the shoot, and the weather wasn't cooperating, and then the locations, sometimes like, we got the steam room at the wrong time of day, so we couldn't shoot in the steam room as a location because they had been running the steam all day long. You know, it was just stupid shit like that, lost in translation. So the end, but every single day we'd get something better than what I had originally planned. Things kind of fell into place in a certain way, and I started to make this joke. I'm like, she's got a mind of her own, Spain. You'll come here and you think you're gonna do one thing, but she is gonna come to you and tell you, no, you don't know better. I'll show you what you should be making. And every day we got something really, really special and wonderful. And I, at the end of that shoot, I was like, I wish I could have the foresight and wisdom to enter all my productions this way, where I leave that room for chance and for better things to, you know, but I'm always holding on, trying to, you know, make the plan work. It's a good producer.
No, that makes sense. I get that. I'm curious though, like when you talk about that, I think most people watching this who've ever taken an English class, it like writing a paper is torture because no matter how many times you edit it, you can always find more shit wrong. So my question to you is, when you're editing your own stuff, are you ever fully satisfied, or is it like, okay, this is good enough?
I have different levels of satisfaction and for different reasons. I will say that in these last few years, I feel like I'm making the best work that I've ever made. And I keep thinking, okay, am I done? Like, is it time to like go do something else? And then, you know, I get finished making the movie that I made, you know, on the coast or the one right before it. And I think, you know, this product is for studio work. If you're interested in studio work, it's really, really good. Like, I'm still keeping myself entertained and I'm still raising the bar for myself and pushing myself harder. So, but as far as satisfaction goes, I think just at the end of the day, you just have to accept this is what we made. These things were good. These things could be better. Learn from this, learn from that, let that part go, and move on and make it better next time.
Have you ever made something and thought to yourself, like, this is a fucking pile of shit, like, everyone's gonna fucking hate it, and then people are like, oh my God, I love it, it's the greatest thing ever?
Well, I had a scene as a performer that I thought that I was just fucking up, like royally, because I kind of got sick, and I think I was having a bad reaction to Viagra, and I realized that Viagra wasn't for me, because when you see blind spots, they say, you shouldn't be taking this. And it was the first day where I was ever having problems as a model, and I was like seeing whole pieces of the room were disappearing, and it was freaking me out. And I was like, I don't think that should be a blind spot. And what are these like tracers? Like, this is not good. And I thought I was letting the director down, and I had to sit. The room got really, really hot because it was on location in a tattoo parlor, and the air wasn't on, and I was freaking out. But it was just, this is a ink storm. But people would say, that scene with you and Logan McCree is so motherfucking hot. Like, I think it's like the hottest thing I've ever seen. And I'm thinking, God, they must be really good in the editing room, or when I was on, and you're missing all the parts where I'm practically throwing up and this and this and that. So there's an example of like something that I thought was a pile of shit, and then it turns out to be like some people's favorite movie. Now, the thing that I've made, I don't know. It's hard for me to see myself objectively in that way. Like, if I'm responsible for the edit or I'm responsible, I'll see the mistakes all the time. I'm
Gotcha.
wired in a fucked up way, so I don't know.
Is there anything you've ever done where you just thought it was amazing, but it just didn't resonate with the fans for whatever reason?
I mean, sure. I made so many movies now. I mean, I'm always surprised at, this should be great, and then it was okay. And this was, we put the normal amount of work into it, and it just landed. I really think it comes down to the models at the end of the day. Once you get a certain skill level with camera, I know that whenever I'm gonna show up on set, I now have this camera skills where it's gonna be shot proficiently, and it's gonna be shot, better than just average, I think, because I should by now have those skills. So at that point, it's really the models bring the, if we light it right and, we set it up right, and I get out of their way, or I say the right things as a director that inspire them, then, it is really about what the models bring to the table, and they can really make or break the scene. I mean, it's just the truth. It really comes in because people aren't coming to see me. They're coming to see, this hot guy and this hot guy fuck. And so can I say the right, am I a good matchmaker? Can I say the right things that's gonna, either shut up when I need to shut up, or say that's hot when at that moment when they need to hear it? That's really the make or break of the movie for me. It's what the performers are doing and getting the best out of them.
What do you think is the most challenging part of your job? That maybe?
I think the most challenging part of the job is, like I said, production has a lot of changes, and you have to roll with the punches, and I have to constantly think of where I gotta find that location. I gotta find these guys, and then we gotta keep everything on track, and it has to make it, I have to everything has to be on budget, because I'm producing my own stuff too now, so now I know like. It's like juggling. You're constantly juggling all these factors. It's more than just what the fans see. It's things that happen backstage. And so it's a hard job, and I don't think it ever really gets any easier. And the hardest part of it is keeping it fresh for yourself and not getting burnt out. And keeping it fresh for the fans, and show must go on.
What is an average studio budget for one scene, if you're allowed to answer that?
Well, I can tell you what our movie budgets fluctuate depending on the scale of the movie. I will say that currently I'm putting together an all-sex movie, and the challenge is to bring it home at 30K. That's the challenge. That is very hard to do when you're a studio of our size, because there's not just the models. You got to pay the cameramen, you got to pay the photographers, you got to pay, you know what I mean? There's like, the bigger the company, the more everybody, and then we have a staff that we have to keep employed. So, what might seem like a crazy, amazing budget, I wish I had that to work with, for some producers might, be tougher if the company's larger, because they have more mouths to feed. And so right now I'm trying to figure out how I'm gonna bring it in at 30K, and I'm at 29 right now, and I'm feeling really proud. But we haven't bought
Oh, shit.
the plane tickets yet, so ask me in a month.
Oh, fuck. So I'm curious though, like how much, because you talked about shoot locations a lot. How do you pick the shoot location?
Well, that there in of itself is an interesting problem, because I feel like there's so many fans out there that have amazing locations that would love naked men to run around their property and get paid while they're watching naked men
Ooh.
run around on their property. But for some reason, we haven't quite figured out as a company how to advertise that need. I have suggested that, we have a model application form. So we've got that on lock, where hot guys can just go to the website and say, "Yeah, I want to be a model." And we have guys all over the world who want to sign up for porn, every day. But I feel like we need one of those forms at work for the people who've got hot, great private locations and want to invite us, and then, make some amount. We're not Hollywood, so you're not going to get rich, but pay them for a location, depending on how grand the location is. Usually it's word of mouth, people that we meet. I met people at gay bars who we just start talking about what I'm doing, and they say, "Oh, well, I've got this cabin, and I'd love to watch, and I'm like, "Really? Oh my God, that's fucking amazing." So if you have a location, I am Steve Cruz, at I am Steve Cruz, Twitter or X, whatever.
I shit. Yeah. Okay. No, I think you're absolutely right. There's gotta be, I guarantee you there's at least a few people watching this who've got a great location.
Yeah,
So
and
if you're
I'll
watching this, hit Steve up.
if it's private and you own it, hey, hit us up.
Shit. Damn. Okay. Yeah, no, there's gotta be tons of gay guys who would love to do that. I don't know,
It's
maybe you need
usually
to put
the
that on the
girls.
website.
I know. I really should.
Just
I don't know.
submit
Sometimes
pictures of your property.
I don't fully utilize Twitter the way I should. Like, I just do a lot of like retweets of my own work, and I really should be more interactive with the fans. And I should say, sometimes I'll say I'm looking for new guys every once in a while. But I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, is that desperate? Does that look weird? Like, you're
No.
Falcon Studios. Like, shouldn't you have all of that at your disposal? And then the truth is, in life, you just have to be open to things. Sometimes you have great locations and sometimes you don't. You just never know what you're gonna find until you ask. So I should probably put that out more often.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's remotely desperate at all. I mean,
Well,
it's not like
with
you can't shoot in the same room every time.
comment culture, and then people go, "Gee, I would think that if you're Falcon, you should,"
Oh God.
all
Yeah,
the
but there will
hate.
always be trolls. Always.
There will be. I just never get used to it. I'm so sensitive.
Yeah, fuck the haters. You will
No,
never ever have a
don't
hater who is
fuck.
doing better than you. Okay, you're right.
Never fuck the haters. Let them go without sex. I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, no, okay. So, also, I read that you're a bass player.
I do play bass. Yeah, I'm not very well, but I try. I've never had a lesson in my life, so I play by ear, and then I'll just listen to my favorite music and just kind of play back. And then, sometimes if I'm really stuck, thank God there's YouTube and people that like to show you, I'm trying to, after all these years of playing bass, I'm trying to perfect the slap technique, because a lot of the music that I like a lot of funk and like early 80s R&B stuff, and that's a lot of slap bass. I like complicated bass lines and rhythms, and I want to maybe one day play a Chic song and not have Bernard Edwards rolling over in his grave. But I do, and I like rock, and I like a lot of like 80s alternative bands. So I'll play a lot of Smiths, a lot of Cure, a lot of Cure.
Nice.
It's fun. It's a thing I do. Just
So that's like
my
one of your
self.
free time hobbies.
Yeah, and when I'm in the man cave, this is the man cave. I'll screw around and I'll DJ, or more frequently, I'll push myself on bass to learn another song and get a little bit better. Yeah, it's fun.
So are those records in your background?
Those are vinyl records. Yes, I'm that
Oh,
old.
shit.
Yeah, but to be honest, I don't mix vinyl very well. I'm much better at in the digital. I don't try that hard to do a mix with vinyl. I'll screw around with it, but the mixes that I post on Radio Steve Cruz are mostly deep house and classic house, deep house, sometimes some tech and some minimal house, and I like a lot of jazzy kind of vibes. That's my thing. So, and I like acid house a lot, and I would from that's my generation, and I'll do that with digital mixing. So I'll usually put out a mix. I try to put out at least 4 a year, because I usually around the changing of the seasons, I think, oh, it's a lot of new music out right now, I should put out a mix. So I like to do that. It's fun. I've just finished one that I'm going to put out in about a week. I'm just waiting for the illustrator to do my cover, because I like to draw and I like to paint, but when it comes to doing the cover art, I like to hire artists that I really admire. So, and I have a favorite guy that I work with, Phelan, I think is how you say his name. Anyway, he's kind enough to do covers for me from time to time. So we're working on that right now. But I don't monetize any of my music. I don't want to do that. I just something I like to do for fun. It's like a fun
Wow.
streaming channel.
You really like got the creative gene in spades.
I don't know. I can't do your hair, and I can't sew to save my life, but I can cook. And I can paint and draw, and I've got all that geek
Wow.
stuff.
Oh, so you can cook too. Okay.
I mean, I like to bake more than I like to cook for people. I like to, make pies and cakes and that sort of thing. So my, daddy belly gets nice and round, but
I was just gonna ask if you're baking that shit all the time, how are you not fat as hell?
I'm not baking it all the time, but I do. My husband is. I do keep my husband eating, so he likes it when I make cakes and that sort of thing. So,
Oh
I
God.
do that.
Yeah, no, I could not be married to someone like you. I would weigh 500 pounds.
Yeah, but
I maintain my physique by not having that shit in the house.
I'm gonna be honest, okay. So, the type of guys that I like the bears, especially as I've been working out in porn as long as I have. The guys that I put in my movies that studios say, okay, this is the studio body, right? Isn't necessarily what I want to yank it to. I want to play around with. I like guys that have. So if you and I were dating, I'd be working very hard to put a round belly on you. Because I think,
If
I
I
want to
relax, it's round.
see. Yeah, because you're hung enough to carry it off. So, it's like, yeah, that's hot to me. And then like the content creators that I follow are very different than the guys that I would like put in a studio movie. Because, you know, let's be honest, I work for someone. I work for a studio, so there are guidelines to brands, brands that existed before I even got in the industry. You know, that's a plus, but it's also a minus to a creative person too, because now that we're in the content creation world, I really, you know, as a former performer, I really, really dig it because you get to see that there's a customer for every body type. If you know, there could be a fan for anything. You know, the numbers might vary, and you know, there's always what's popular, and obviously studios go for what's the most popular so they can make the most money, and it's always what's traditionally popular. But like, I think it would be fun to also like produce for different body types. I think that would be really, really fun. And I know that I couldn't do that necessarily for my studio, but I always toy with the idea of, I wonder if like a director or a cameraman could do content creation with models and have their own channel and do that like democratic trading of content. And just we all make money off of it and it's okay. And I always wonder if that's like possible, because I would totally do that. I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna film some hot bears right now. You know, I think that would be a lot of fun and different. You know, I think that'd be very, very different. So that's kind of where my head's at, because I love collabing as a director. You know, I've done it a lot. I've co-directed with you know, directors who are established, and then I've co-directed with models who have wanted to become directors, and I've helped them grow the way somebody helped me grow. But I think it would also be fun to collab with people outside of the studio system, so I get a full, well-rounded like experience of sexuality and film some of the things that I'm also interested in besides this over
I think that's a phenomenal idea.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna explore that a little bit as the market changes and grows. Hopefully that won't affect what I'm doing in my day job, but I'm sure it'll
Was
let me.
actually one of the things I was lo really looking forward to asking you was how you felt about the evolution of porn and content creation, and what do you think the future looks like?
I mean, you know, when we first saw OnlyFans blow up and we see content creators having the freedom and now they don't have to go through studios to get work, you know, of course you see all the articles and models alike, you know, saying this is the end of studio. You know, well, I've seen studio face the end of studio so many times. I mean, they said it when, you know, web started. You know, when all of a sudden web producers were, you know, okay, well now, you know, studios are fucked because now people can just build up a website and post whatever they want on it. And you saw different content that didn't look as stylized and difficult to make as studio. You know, you saw, okay, now this is just guys fucking in a white room. And then this is so hot, this is so real. But somehow studios survived that whole thing many, many times over. Bareback, when studios refused for health reasons because they couldn't figure out quite how to, you know, do the bareback thing ethically. We didn't have prep yet. You had studios that were, you know, doing what was ethical and doing condoms, and then you have other studios that are not doing condom, and you know, oh, it's the end of studio porn. You know, nobody's gonna want to watch condom porn, you know, but yet they survived that. So I don't think studios, there's always going to be a customer that wants to see stories and all the things that we do over at studio and want to see perfection. There's always going to be like a Hollywood version, and there's always going to be a DIY version that people are going to want to see. And then the two keep playing this tug of war, and then they influence each other, and then somehow in the middle, you know, that's where the interesting thing happens. So yeah, maybe we should be panicked, but I don't think it's the end of studio, but I'm actually excited by it because I feel like it keeps us at studios in check. You know, when I say, oh, I want to work with this on a body, I want to work with this person, and they go, oh, no, I don't think our customer's gonna want to see that. I think our sales will tank. You can't cast, because I can't just cast who I want. I'll throw up, like, I submit a cast every time. And then the producers and the marketing department, I'll go through it, and then they say, okay, yes, no. You know, and they'll pull people out and say, I don't think this is on brand, or find somebody hotter than that looks like that. or you know, because they want to make the most amount of money. There's that's their job. That's what they want to do. I'm not ragging on it, you know. But you know, I don't have 100%, you know, choice when it comes to that. So I think it's really great because people who aren't a cup of tea right now, today for studios, or studios don't want to take a risk because they're looking for a certain type today and don't know that this would be really hot and this would be really marketable. You know, these people can go out and they can get their own fans and they can be their own marketing department and they can, you know, make money. And I think that's really, really great. And then we see that influence what they're doing over here. And now all of a sudden, oh, okay, he's got how many followers? Oh, yeah, we should work with him. So I think that that's really, really awesome. It's checks and balances. And then there's people that don't want to work for studios at all. And I was at first when content creators, I would go after this guy. I was after this guy forever. And he had to really be convinced by several performers who had worked with me before he would even like talk to me in DMs. And then when he finally got into my studio 2 years later, he told me, I don't want to work for studios because I don't want to work that hard. Like, why would I do that when I can own my own content and I can set up the sexual scenarios that reflect me? Like, why would I want to? I only came to this because you were highly recommended, but I probably wouldn't be doing this for all the studios because I don't want to have this studio experience. My sexuality is outside of the studio experience. And I think that's perfectly valid too. You know, I think, you know, collabing and doing things that work for you, I think it's great that people have the ability to monetize and make a living, you know, doing things. So that's how I feel about it.
I've asked that question to a bunch of people, and that is by far, hands down, the single best answer I've ever heard.
Well, thanks. But that's how
Like,
I feel.
nothing even comes close.
Yeah. I mean, you know, truth be told, we're trying to facilitate collabs, you know, with the guys that we work with, because a lot of them are content creators. And like, I had a very expensive location that, you know, probably going to be paying for forever last week. And we were letting the guys collab in the basement part, you know, because you know I was thinking, you know, these guys want to, I mean, maybe these new guys don't necessarily feel comfortable working in the studio, but they do feel comfortable collabing. And if we create a safe space where this guy lives in Florida, this guy lives in Massachusetts, this guy lives in California, and they're all coming together to this beautiful place, and if we create a safe space where they can collab and share content with them, then you know maybe that's another way that we can work in the current market, you know what I'm saying, and get the guys to, you know, be interested in working with us. So I set that when we set that up on the last shoot, and that was very successful. Everybody except for two people took advantage of that opportunity and will have scenes on their, you know, on their pages for their members that, you know, so. Yeah,
You
we're
are
doing just fine.
really, really talented when it comes to thinking outside the box.
Well, I didn't come up with that idea, but I was 100% behind it when we found this house because we had the space for it. And I was like, yeah, let's do collabs here for sure. And I, you know, I filmed a couple for them because that was a lot of fun because I didn't, I was like, how are we going to film collabs and not direct? You know, because nobody wants the director experience with content creation. They want like this silent, you know, they just want the guys. So I was like, but I don't want to just set an iPhone on like, you know, on a stand. That's just fucking boring, right? So I was like, okay, you guys just, I'm just going to follow your lead. When you want to take a break, you stop, you know, and I just kind of like punched in on all the hot spots. I was just like this thinking camera that didn't say a fucking word. You know? And I was just like, yeah, what would I want to see right now? They're fucking, and I want to see that dick go into that asshole right now. So I'm gonna film that part. oh, but what's he thinking right now as he's getting pounded? What's the bottoms? Like, I can hear him moaning. Wait, I want to see that. So I would just kind of jump kind of back and forth between all the hot spots in a way, in a camera style that doesn't need to be edited. It just kind of flowed. That's what got me
Wow.
thinking, I want to do that too with guys in a, and I love the marketplace being democratic, where it's like we all got together to create something in a collaboration, and then we all share the spoils, and what we make depends on, how we promote it, right? Because your video is going in yours, it's going in the performers, it's going in everybody's, but somebody's gonna buy it once somewhere. And so, like, if I want to make money off of it, then I promote the motherfuck out of it. And then, I make the money off it, but they can do the same thing and their fans follow them. I love the democracy of that. I think that that's a beautiful business model,
Yeah.
So,
No, I
anyway.
like that. So, how, to anyone watching who is either a content creator or wants to get into it, what would tips be that you would give to operating the camera?
Oh, so
Like, what are the
another.
most important elements?
I mean, okay, I'll tell you what the guy that trained me said about my camera work, okay? And it's not a technical thing, it's a perspective and a point of view, it's a philosophy. So I don't know how valid this will be for young people, but you want to run camera like you're that guy at the bathhouse. That like there's an orgy going on, and he's got like he I don't know, this is his analogy. He's got like thick glasses, and nobody's paying attention to him, but he wants to be right up in the middle of it, and he kind of creeps slower and slower and slower to where all the sex is happening. And you want to do that kind of camera work, the guy that's kind of sitting on the sidelines and getting closer and closer and getting the courage to finally get in there and touch what's going on. And so it's like you're kind of filming everything, getting closer and closer and closer, and you want to show everything. You want to show all that penetration. Like, I'll see a lot of content creators, and they're doing the best that they can because they're just guys fucking in a room, and they'll put their iPhone on a stand, but they're not thinking about how much penetration their viewers can see because they're too busy thinking about how much fun that they're having. I kind of talked about this earlier about how it was hard for me to flip back and forth between two different mentalities. When you're behind the camera, you're just, I want to see that penetration. So that's what makes studio work so hard because I'm constantly saying, twist open, twist open, twist open. I don't want to see your thigh. I want to see your giant cock going in and out of this asshole at this perfect angle. And that's what everybody else wants to see. That will not change whether it's a DIY iPhone, whether it's a fucking expensive red camera. They will always want to see the same thing. They always want to see the same thing that's not softcore. Guys don't care about the soft. They don't want to see the, you want to see all of it. So, if you're running your own cameras, figure out a way or pay attention to how much penetration someone can see if you're doing that, if you're not just doing solos. Because if you can't see the fucking, nobody's interested in that clip. I don't think. Right?
Yeah. Okay. No, that's a good that's a good answer. Okay. Let's see. Derek Bolt asked. Yeah, no, we already answered that.
We covered that.
He said what been at the top of their game for so long, what's changed since you started? What's better? What's worse? Is there anything you'd add to that?
I mean, we kind of talked about that. Just, we've talked about this whole state of the industry and what's, I would say that I would like, I think I've already said it, that I would like the freedom to cast different body types, I think. I think we have an idea of diversity that we have an idea of diversity in our culture right now that it's like paint swatches. We want to see the same mold in all the colors now, and we think that that's diversity, but that's just a superficial idea of diversity when in reality, I mean, there's a whole experience that we're not even addressing. Like, if you're going to talk about diversity, you need diversity in writing and people behind the camera. And that's why, I got into the movie like Men's Briefs, for example, where I worked with different models with different experiences, and then I had them write their own story, and then we made it. But different body types, I think, or I think that's the next place we need to go, and where we're filming different shapes. Even if we have to create different lines for it, so be it. But I think we need to create different shapes, because you're seeing it in mainstream culture, you're seeing it in Hollywood, you're seeing it, in fashion. I mean, if you're seeing plus size models in fashion, but you're not seeing it in porn, then it's gotta try to transcend a little bit. So anyway,
That's a good point. All right.
I think that would be.
Sam wants to know what it'll take to get you back in front of the camera, or is that even possible?
It's not. I've thought about it with the whole collabing thing. People have asked me, and I'm like, I feel horny right now. Maybe I should get my side hustle on. Why am I not making more money? Why am I not taking advantage of this and that? And then I kind of come to my senses, and I was like, well, you're not doing it because you're not that person anymore. Like, I really enjoyed being a performer. Like, I just loved everything about it until one day I just didn't want to do it anymore. And my sexuality is private now. It's so different than it used to be when I was a performer. Like, it's not what the fans think it might be. Like, I'm attracted to different guys than what people think I am, and I like that it's private, because I'm worried about young people today and the performers today and the content creators today, because it's so hard to exist in this world, because it's you've got to, inflation is so bad. I'm sure there's a whole generation of young men that are never going to get to own their own home or even know what that's like, and there's so much pressure. And so it's great that we have these markets where people can monetize and they can put themselves out there and they can make their own money. But I worry if you just keep selling pieces of yourself, and you keep selling pieces of yourself because you have to just to survive in this world, what are you gonna have left at the end of the day that's just yours? So I always tell models and content creators, save one or two things that's yours and yours alone, and do not share that with the public, so that when when it's all said and done, you still have something that's private. In a world where there's like no fucking privacy whatsoever, you have something that you didn't sell, you can keep for yourself.
Damn. That's fucking deep and profound, but
It's
so fucking
important,
true.
because at the end of my perform, like when I decided I didn't want to be a performer anymore, I had some hard days, where they wanted me to still perform, and they kept pushing me to perform, and I hadn't quite figured out yet that I was done. And so I did it anyway to please people. And, I was very sad. I think, like, the second to the last time I performed, even though I had a good time, I was curled up in a ball crying, saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to turn the thing that I had so much fun into something that's hard and I'm going to regret later. I want the memory of that to always be good. I want to leave the party while people are still having. I don't want it to be a sad thing, like, oh, I have to do this to make money, or I have to do this to make people happy. So,
Shit.
anyway, that's why I
Dude,
say
that.
save something for yourself. You got to save something for yourself. And I don't think we think about that right now, right? With social media, where it's all about monetize, get your followers, and do everything necessary. You've got to post content all day long. You've got to, time it out and keep engagement going. And if you don't have these followers, you're nobody. Well, that's not true. You're somebody. And that person, that private person's important and needs protecting and needs, support too.
Jesus,
In
fuck,
a
dude.
non-financial way.
Okay, just so you know, like the last 5 minutes of you talking is going to rattle around in my brain for like the next forever. That,
Cool.
wow, that was just fuck. But it just, what you said just really resonated with me, and I really hope the people watching, wow, that was okay. Fuck.
Thanks.
Oh
Hopefully.
shit. Okay. All right. Dear Mr. Cruz, OnlyFans has become the new way of doing porn, but it has also shown a deep, dark side to the individuals. Many creators are charging fans if they want to sleep with them. Do you think it's
Really?
possible to sleep with fans and not charge money? I don't.
Is that the question? It
Yeah.
is physically possible for a performer, if they want to have sex with one of their fans, it is physically possible to do that for free. I do believe that that is a possibility, but I've never really thought about having sex with my fans physically. I mean, I don't, I struggle with the idea of fans. Like in the beginning, it was all very novel and very interesting. And I'm like, oh, I have fans, you know? And then I start developing this relationship with this intangible group of people that support you, the fans, you know? And they love me and I love them. And I try to create good content for them. And I think about them all the time when I'm creating. But I don't know the individual when you say fan, unless I meet you as a person. I'm not gonna know what you, that fan, you know, what who you are, what you feel, what you like, because you're part of a group. So when I meet a person who's also a fan, like P-Man, who's like a huge porn fan, I met him at award shows, I met the person. Now, yes, you're a fan, yes, you're a customer, but you're also now someone that I know. I know something about you, you're a person to me now. So, like, you know, and that would be true of anyone. So, if I decided to have sex with a person that happened to watch my stuff and I met them at a bar, and, you know, I would be having sex with that person. I wouldn't be having sex with my fan. Does that make sense?
Damn, that was a good answer.
No, but it's true, because if you're going to have, you know, unless, of course, it's a rent-man situation. Right? And that becomes transactional, and that's apparently what's offensive to this person right now, because that's what the question is. Can you have sex with somebody without charging me? And it's like, well, I mean, it de depends, you know. If I go to a bar and I think you're cool, and I don't know, maybe you've been watching my stuff forever, and but we hit it off as, you know, as people. I'm gonna have sex with that person, but I'm not gonna have sex with a nameless, faceless entity fan, you know what I mean? In that respect, because that's not possible. It's not possible. That's an intangible relationship.
Agreeing.
Hopefully that's not offensive who's a fan.
No, that was a great answer. I agree with that 100%. Someone says they love your beard and you have aged exceedingly well.
Whoa. I've aged. That's fucking sure. It's kind of freaking me out how much gray I've got now, you know. When I see you, it's like boner time. Like you've got amazing gray. And I love it on other guys. And then I look in the mirror and I'm like, but not on you. You know what I mean?
Dude,
Like
gray
we say
doesn't look bad on anybody, ever.
I don't know. For me, I look in the mirror and I see it on myself and I see my dad. But I'll see, maybe that's it. Like we see aging on another guy and we think that's really fucking hot. Because we don't know that guy's dad, and that's not our dad. But we look in the mirror and we see ourselves age, and then we see family members and grandparents and stuff, and then we think that's not hot. You know, I'm aging. So bless your hearts if you like the gray. Thanks.
You know what who your facial hair really reminds me of? Tom Selleck.
Shut up, really?
Yeah.
I like Tom Selleck, so thanks.
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
easily Tom Selleck. If you agree, if you
Jack
think.
PI. Maybe not Blue Bloods, but yeah, I like Magnum PI.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Awesome.
Okay, if you get a chance to direct a gay-only reality show, what would that be?
Gay only reality show. I mean, I kind of do that with porn anyway. You know, a lot of my shtick and my writing, because, you know, let's face it, a lot of sexual performers aren't necessarily actors. I mean, isn't that the running joke, right? Oh, these studios always make non-actors perform just to put a storyline. Why are you doing that? So I figured out a way of doing that. You know, how many reality shows are out there? And using that format where models can do lines to the cameraman like confessional style. And I find that a lot of non-actors can get their head around, oh, I'm this guy in the reality show. You know what I mean? It's easier. And then, so I've actually been directing that style of porn movie for about 4 years, like Out of the Park, Cake Shop, the last thing that I just did, which is more reality without the drama and the, you know, funny stuff. It was more just sort of like documentary reality. So I feel like I already do that. I don't watch a lot of reality shows. I don't like reality drama as entertainment. I don't know. It's like eating a lot of Taco Bell, which actually I do. That's a bad analogy. It's like eating a lot of Wendy's. I don't know.
All right, that question, that answer actually ties in to the next question. Apparently, you've got the most glorious belly fur in all of porn history. Hell, in all history. How do you stay looking so good?
Thanks. I don't know. I don't know if I look that great, but I do appreciate it. And my belly fur, I just don't shave. So I guess I've been fortunate enough to have a decent pattern, you know? So that's just nature. So thank you.
All right, and then someone said, "Love his work. He is an amazing director. We'll always be waiting for his new movie, and he is the hottest daddy."
Well, thanks. Appreciate.
And yeah, no, I mean everything else we've
We've hit it.
discussed. So what does the
Here.
future look like for you?
Oh, now I'm gonna have a existential crisis. That's a
Oh,
hard
shit.
question. No. I can tell you what's coming out. You know, I can tell you that we come to your senses, which I wanted to call smell like a man, but they want to call it come to your senses, and I'm coming to terms with that because I think smell like a man is a really good title. It's all about huffing pits and ball sweat and just the whole eroticism of smells and furry bodies. That's out right now on RagingStallion.com. Overdrive is coming out on the 29th, and that's our horror movie. It's about a guy that's a rideshare driver that gets into an altercation with a drive with a ride that, you know, they've obviously connected physically, and then it turns into obsession. And it's scary because, like, you could go home with an unhinged rideshare driver and they know where you live. And
Oh
so,
shit.
like, you have like you give them like a bad review, or you Karen them and get them like dropped. Like, they could spend the rest of their time like stalking you, following the people you know. And so that's kind of what this movie is about. It's a horror film that could kind of like a Black Mirror kind of vibe about this unhinged rideshare
Jesus.
driver that kind of works his way down the line of revenge. So that's what we're doing for Halloween, and it kind of does have that kind of real horror movie vibe going on. There's some pretty, I don't know, some gruesome stuff. And I co-directed that with Ben Rush. And yeah, so that's kind of what's coming in the near future. As far as my future goes, I'm just going to keep plugging along because I can't believe I'm still on the wave. I'm so full of gratitude. Every day I can't believe it. And every day I can't believe that I'm still making stuff that keeps me interested and keeps me feeling proud and like I'm still growing at, you know, gosh, 15 years as a director. So I'm just amazed that I'm still here. And while I'm doing that, I'm thinking of what the next 15 years of my life might look like. 'Cause I'm sure I can't direct sex forever. And just trying to think of other things, maybe get my art business going. I like to paint, maybe start doing that a little bit. So maybe that'll be in my future. Or I don't know. Hopefully something good.
Damn. Okay, seriously, thank you. You fucking gave me a complex about rideshare now. I'm definitely not watching that fucking video because just your brief description of it has now got my paranoid ass like, oh
But you're
shit.
not a
Fuck
dick.
that.
Like, yeah, you're not a bad guy. Like, you're not
No,
gonna
but like, what
care.
happens if it's like some crazy obsessive driver?
Yeah, I don't know. Just be real nice and give 5 stars every time, even if the car smells like dookie and it's like dirty. Just say, clean car, great conversation. He knows where I live. Right.
Oh Oh my God. It's been a long time since I've laughed this much in an interview. So, for anyone watching who does want to follow you, where can they find you on social media? All the shit you want to plug, all that good
Right.
stuff.
So, mostly my porn personality lives on Twitter for as long as Twitter exists, because who knows what the fuck's gonna happen in that marketplace. It's like he's trying to break it most days. But that said, I am at I am Steve Cruz is going to remain my handle for my porn career on Twitter, as long as we can be on Twitter, which is great that we can be there. And then I've kind of been transitioning my other social media away from porn, but I do have an Instagram account. What is it? I changed it. It used to be IMC Cruz, and I think it's Steve For Real now. But I kind of post more of my. It's probably going to be boring to porn fans because I kind of just post my stuff, like everything from my bike rides to my garden to cooking. It's just kind of like and my bass playing, my riffing, and that kind of shit. So, that's kind of it
Yeah.
for social media.
Shit. Okay. No, I have had an absolute blast talking to you. You're fucking hilarious. Just your creative
Thank you.
mind, your drive, your passion is evident in everything you do.
Well, thank
So.
you. You're a nice guy, Masculine Jason. You're a nice guy. I like your
I try.
energy. Yeah, no, you just are. You have good energy, and you're handsome, and it's obvious why you have tons of fans. So, and maybe one day we could figure that out, how we're gonna collab and
Yes,
do
that would
something.
be
But
amazing.
that would be fun.
You have no idea how much I kicked myself when I saw. I was like, motherfucker.
Oh yeah, they don't know what we're talking about,
Oh,
right?
okay.
They
So,
don't know. You tell the story really
all
quickly. Here
right.
we go.
So, anyways, quick story. So, a bunch of you guys have been asking me to interview Steve Cruz. So I went on Twitter to message him, and back on August 1st in 2019, Steve messaged me, said, "Can we chat about rate or casting opportunities at Raging Stallion?" And then his phone number. And I never responded to it.
And you found it
Ever.
in 2023.
Yeah, and I was like, when I read that, I was like, what the fuck? What, I don't. Apparently, I read it and just didn't respond to it or didn't see it. And when I saw that, my heart sank. I was like,
But you don't know how many
motherfucker.
times that's happened to me with people too. They'll write me and I'm like, wait a minute, you wrote me? Because I don't ever want to offend or like, I want to at least say something back. For the time and trouble, and I will probably read it, but I'll be on production somewhere or I'll be running somewhere, and then it slips my mind, and then it's like, oh man, they must think I'm just stuck up asshole. Read, but no reply. So you are forgiven.
Hey guys, just wanted to say thank you for watching this video. And if you did really enjoy it, I just wanted to mention there are two ways that you can help to support this channel. On the right side, there are three little dots. If you click those, there is a super thanks button. And on the left-hand side, there is a join button where you can join this channel. There are three different tiers of memberships. The top tier does actually allow one-on-one messaging with me via Discord. And I personally answered that it is not a service. That's just, both of those are ways that you can help support me as a content creator in this channel. I mention this because YouTube is by far the thing that I enjoy doing the most. It's the thing I'm most passionate about. And unfortunately, a lot of the sexual videos, the porn star confessions, the Dom sub, all that stuff, it is not monetized due to the nature of the videos. But either way, thank you so much for taking the time to watch this. I hope you guys all have an absolutely amazing week. I love you all.